film sucks. Indie film sucks. It's the Indie Film Sucks podcast. Yeah.
Coming at you from the mean streets of St. Louis, from a basement on South Broadway, the Indie Film Sucks podcast. Because indie film is, well, it's just pretty fucking terrible, if you want my honest opinion. But hey, here
wow.
we are.
Wow, what a night to come.
With
hey, God.
Scott Michael Dunn.
Woo!
Actor yeah. extraordinaire.
Extraordinaire.
Mackie has a question for you. Oh, by the way, I'm Chris Grega.
I'm Brock Roberts.
And I'm Chris Mackie.
Just here.
What's your suck, Scott Michael Dunn?
What's my what?
What's your suck?
Yeah, what's your suck, dude?
What's my suck? Yeah. Is that the first question?
It's always the first question.
Mm.
Yeah.
What my suck about you? Indie films?
Sure. Yeah.
Most often, they are a clusterfuck. A whole bunch of things pushed into one tiny little hole that you hope fits.
Can you go into more detail on that?
Detail. Well, I mean, I've done, you know, I've written, produced, I've acted, I've directed to some degree, and often it's a clusterfuck. You try to cover everything. You try to think of everything. And you never, ever think of everything. So that's where it's like, oh, I'm scrambling for this and scrambling for that, and somebody else is scrambling for this. And then once you've laid off the scramble you can't handle onto someone else, they're scrambling for that, and you're hoping that you put something together that makes sense. I think regardless, this is a cool part. Obviously, it sucks most often because it's so challenging. But the cool part is that in the end of all things, that you got to participate in something that you love, and you're being creative, and you're, you know, able to be a part of something cool. In the end, it's always cool. Even if it sucks, even if it's not what you think you were going to end up with, it's still fucking cool.
Most of the time.
Oh, Christ.
So you like to get dirty.
I do like to get dirty.
Because it's so hard, right, Scott? It's so hard. That's what I heard you say. It's very hard. It's messy. It's sloppy. Dirt. Yeah, exactly. It's tough.
Would you say it's difficult because it's indie, therefore underfunded, 9 times out of 10?
I mean, 9 times out of 10 underfunded?
Well, because
I mean,
there's different types of independent, right? There's the level we're at, which is not quite the bottom rung, but pretty damn close.
Right.
And then there are people who make, quote-unquote, independent films that are still backed up with studio-like money, right? I'm not talking about that type of independent film. That type of independent film is essentially a studio film without the studio. Like no. Zach Braff, the guy from Scrubs, made a couple of independent movies. Mm. One, he raised a few million bucks on Kickstarter or whatever. That's not really an indie film that we're talking about. I mean, from a technical standpoint, it is, but I'm talking about...
I mean, Lionsgate is independent.
Well, I mean, they're a studio, but...
I know, but like in you look at, you have the major studios and the conglomeration of that, and then beneath that is all independent. We're all just layers of independent.
So that's
tend to be on lower rung.
That's what I mean
way
by...
Way the fuck down, actually.
Tall ladder.
Way the fuck down on that. It's not a tall ladder.
Oh, it's not?
No, we're just way the fuck down.
How far have you been up? I can't even see the top of the ladder.
That's what I mean by 9 times out of 10.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, I agree. I mean, I don't know, you know, marginally how to represent it, but I think that one of the most conflicting aspects of producing any independent film is figuring out how to create what you envision and do it with little to no fucking money. You know, you can't build sets, you can't create these beautiful artistic experiences for your film. You can't. So you got to steal it. Hope that wherever you can steal it from, they'll give it to you for free. or if they catch you, you got to just run like you're the guerrilla filmmaker that we all are in this area. But it's, yeah. So what, 9 times out of 10? Yeah. So as to answer your question, yeah, I think funding is, it is maybe not the sole reason it's such a challenge, but it is a dynamic reason why it's so difficult, no matter how good you are. You know, you could be the best fucking filmmaker in St. Louis and you don't have any money, you're not going to make shit.
Even if you do make a product, a movie, you still may not make shit as far as dollars go in the back end.
Oh, might? Like, where do you get, I mean, where do you find a distributor that's not going to rip you off? You know, or do you hunt them on fucking Google? And then you end up with distributors that don't do anything and just take all of your money. Or you find local theaters that are willing to run you. You know, for a chance, you can grab a little, you know, cash flow, potentially get some butts in the seats, but then they don't market you. So where's the funding, right? You know, it's like, oh, why do these movies that are backed by these major studios? Why, I mean, that's not a very good movie. Why does it do so well? Well, I mean, if you see it on every fucking screen that you could ever imagine, and every piece of paper has some kind of insignia on it representing this fucking movie, and then suddenly it's like, oh, well, I'll go see it. Yeah. Just spend their money. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's in your face. So you can't get in their face. You can't market it. You can't present it. So the best you can do is hope that you can grovel at the front doorstep of a studio or distribution opportunity and hope. Do they think it's good enough? And good enough means, mm-hmm. will it make money?
Mm-hmm. I think that there was a brief window in the early 90s when making an independent film was a actual viable option. And that might have even extended all the way, let's just say there was a brief window in the 1990s mm-hmm. period.
Yeah.
But I feel like that window is closed and the illusion of it is still there because I think the powers that be still want people making independent films on that off chance that someone can catch lightning in a bottle like a Paranormal Activity or, as we've said a million times, the Blair Witch Project.
Sure.
And can, you know, make some money off of it. But I think by and large, the window's closed and it feels like we're all just spinning our wheels.
To piggyback off what you said, it's like, there used to be a carrot you could actually see and possibly grab, you know. Yeah. But now, man, that carrot is gnawed the fuck away. There's just a piece of string with empty hope,
yeah.
you know. And but there needs to be something, some independent film on whatever, not great big level, but a real indie film to actually do really well to give people hope back. And maybe it's a false hope, but, hey, people will still be happy when they're trying to make a movie.
Yeah, but there's still money out, right? Money didn't change. Still money. There's still people with money, right?
The money has changed.
There's still people with money.
Yeah.
People still have money to give to independent filmmakers. Yes. Mm-hmm. People are still getting it. Mm-hmm. I just don't think they know what to do with it once they get it. It's not coming to us.
There is still front-end money to be found.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
How do you turn that into the back-end money? That is the $64,000 question.
Well, it's lining people up that have experience know what to do with that money. Because the first time you get money, and hopefully it's not your first film, it's probably going to be wasted. Right? And I think that's, to your point, even when you were saying, yeah, money is the thing. But there are guys that got money up front that just didn't know how to do it. And the marketing, everybody said that, right? Yeah. There was no money left for the marketing. It wasn't in your face. It wasn't there. So,
no budget.
That's just kind of where I sit on the money kind of conversation is the people that can do it at our level aren't getting it. I don't understand that. And the people that do get it per se aren't necessarily spending it right because that's a whole new world. That's a whole another sausage making project.
Right.
When you do it, but it adds more complexity to it.
Yeah. Well, I think my response to sort of summing what you're saying to some degree is that if you can take a project and find some place in the black, it doesn't have to be way far in the black. It doesn't even have to have a significant profit at all. But if you can return the investor's money to them, then you become a functioning
unit. Yeah, you're at the top 5% already.
You're functional. Like you actually exist, and you can return this dollar that I gave you, equaling that dollar. And I think what we don't have, so money, right? Quality, production, value, so much talent. I mean, so many things just control money, because people can't continue to work for free. And that's, you know, typically what happens in the indie world. But the money creates the opportunities. You got to know what to do with it.
That's exactly right.
Right. Which is another mess.
What's the formula? Right? Where do you
so
put it?
So what we have is this amazing opportunity, great script. We got all the key players. Everybody's in line. But nobody knows what the fuck to do with the money. And you're like, wow, shit, we need it for this on set. Nobody's saying, no, you can't spend it there because we need it for marketing. Or, you know, we need it for post. Or we need it for whatever. And, you know, there's a missing link. I think within any, so if it's just money, not just money, it's the link that controls what happens with the money. Logistically, I would look at it and I would say, okay, well, we got money left. How much money do we need? Well, what does it matter if you don't know what the fuck to do with it? So you got $50,000 left because you busted ass and lean, mean, fucking Joe Green that shit, and you made a $50,000 movie that's fucking top notch, and you got $50,000, and you dump it all in Google, and you're
Facebook
like,
boost.
We're gonna get clicks, man,
right?
50,000 clicks, and then you go another app.
No, because it goes quick. In that field, it goes quick.
But marketing, generalized marketing is an ROI process. So it's like, okay, if I put this much money into distributing my concept, what's my return? So if I put this much money into this process, what's my return on that money? And it's like, well, we get people are going to look at it.
Yeah.
And right. You go, yeah, that is like richly nothing.
Yeah, richly nothing. That's very apt.
So nothing, right? So if you have money left, as you should, because you have to have a budget for post, you have to have distribution and marketing. So what's the best way to do that? Well, you got to get the film in front of people that can fund taking that film to either next level or creating a distribution platform to present it. So how do you do that?
That takes money.
I don't fucking have the answer to that either, right?
No. I don't know. No, and I think you nailed it even with the disconnect. Because I'm looking for the ROI, right? That's my job as a producer. So that's what I'm always thinking about. Yeah. Every step I make is because of this.
Where the fuck is it?
Right. Well, no, the director's looking for what he's looking for. And you got the line producer saying, hey, we can't spend money on this, right? So it is a disconnect, especially at the independent film level, when you're trying to cross over in, hey, I want to pay this actor what he's worth. I want to pay this person what he's worth.
It is.
I have to bring in these certain elements or the film's not going to be viable to sell, like a name.
Right.
Like, right? So everything has to be right. So I think you nailed it when you said.
Yeah, and then the collaboration is a conflict between the two. You know, where's the money go? And then, you know, two pieces of the pie want it desperately.
Yeah, who's coming in for $15,000 knowing you got $85,000 for... You know, it's just that kind of whole thing, and you know,
because you want it, because you want people to, you want to get the ROI, you want the clicks. We'll call them clicks.
Yeah. No, we don't pay the investors back. That's what we've always been about. That's the first and foremost. We talk about that all the time. Is it's about the people that gave you the money, or you're not making the next one.
And you can't make money on it without some kind of revenue based system.
Right.
A stream of revenue has to come back, which for is what you present with it. You know, how you present it, where you go with it. You have, if you don't have a stream of revenue from what you do with your finished product, then you're spinning your wheels and wasting your time.
Yeah, it seems like what you're talking about is, where's that stream of money come from?
Exactly.
You know, so now it's this ad-based streaming, right? Apparently, is where filmmakers are supposed to make their money back, you know, depending on if it's a good movie. But we still don't know how much are these advertisers paying these platforms to put their ads in your movie.
Mm.
You know, so we don't know that answer, which is, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, is, you know, it's so muddy. We just don't know how much we can actually expect on a dollar spent.
You know, yeah, it's a per view concept.
Yeah.
And then you per follow, per view. I mean, you're talking, I'm just thinking on the YouTube platform.
Right.
It's per view, per follow. So
but what more... do they pay
yeah,
per
that's
view?
The thing. Nobody knows what they're paying.
Oh, it's a fraction.
Per view.
Yeah. It's
well,
a fraction.
We know what we're getting paid, either nothing or pennies on this.
Mm-hmm.
Half of a cent per view or a quarter of a cent per view.
Yeah, around there.
And then who sets that?
Yeah, that's
the question.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, your viewing platform.
Right, and they set it based off of what they're going to say is what the market drives
yeah.
because of the content that's
no,
out there.
No, they just say, here's what you can get, so go get your views.
Because there is no regulatory committee
no.
for that.
No, there's no. It's not managed.
No.
No, Google is selling your shit to advertisers, and the more views you get, the more money, let's just say Google, for example, so that YouTube, the more views you get, your fraction multiplies.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't increase. It multiplies. Like, you don't get more of a fraction because you get more views. You get the same fraction for more views. And then YouTube sells that on their platform for more money because you have more views. So, you know...
It's like anything. Right? Like, it's like anything ad based, though. It's like, why is the Super Bowl so big for ads, right?
Because
it's
well,
going to be more
billion
viewers
people
and,
watching
and
it.
And they can charge more
that's
per ad.
That's the whole point.
So
yeah.
if you got something
yeah.
really good,
right.
you can get the big advertisers.
But what does Google do for
over?
You because of that? I mean, they rise you up. They rise you up in the Google chain. So, like, your you land in the algorithm much higher, more available, more visible.
Sure, I understand that. But what is the... I know you probably don't know that. No one knows the answer. But the question is, how much are these advertisers really paying per view to the platform? And then the platform saying, okay, you're still, these advertisers are only, you know, going to give you half a cent per thousand views or whatever the fuck it really is.
There's probably a handful of people that don't know. Mr. Beast probably has some kind of stake in it where he knows.
Well,
there's a few people that probably
do. I know that
do.
YouTube or Google in itself works on click volume. So... I would think that the advertiser pays similarly as a fraction based upon the amount of click volume that occurs from their advertisement on whatever it is that they're viewing. So, like, you put an ad up, and it's a clickable ad, and the ad comes up right before your video starts, and they click on it. Well, the advertiser pays for that every single time
so it's an after
they
the
click
fact.
On it. They pay for it.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. So it has to be clicked on as opposed to just kind of flat out.
Not has to, but that's one formula.
I gotcha.
Yeah,
another
so it's
formula
not necessarily
is just visibility. Visibility is another formula, mm-hmm. just to be visible and not clickable.
And most people hit skip.
But, you know, 5 seconds is enough.
Yeah, but you only get a penny for that.
Crazy,
get 5
crazy
cents
as that
it's...
sounds, 5 seconds is enough.
Yeah.
You want to brand something, 5 seconds is longer than
especially
enough.
When a million people are looking at it.
Million 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Think about that. So you're it multiplies. So it's like, yeah, but it's only 5 seconds, and then they skipped, right? But like you said, it's 5 million views.
Mm-hmm.
So what's 5 million times 5 seconds? And then if 5 million people click, and it's 10 million views, each click turns into a 50% return. So you sell 2.5 million. Of your product, whatever it might be, not based on what your marginal revenue would be, but like, that's in the perspective, it's like holy shit,
yeah.
that sounds really good.
Yeah.
So what we need to get into is the ad business, is what I'm saying. Okay. Here's a good question, since you know we are talking about more than just the algorithm and how to make money with social media and YouTube and all that crap. How did you get into this business?
I decided, this is one day, I turned 40, and I decided I'm going to get an agent, just like that. It was, I think, January, near my birthday, or around. And I said, there's two things I'm going to do. It's crazy. I'm going to finish college, and I'm going to get an agent, and I'm going to go do commercials. You know, what the hell? It sounds like fun. So I did. I went and auditioned, and I got an agent, and I started college. And... movies didn't start till late that year. And the craziest shit happened. my first film. It's a short film with Lindenwood, mm-hmm. right? It was their capstones and one of Carlos's kids. And I auditioned and I didn't get it. And then they called and said, hey, the person that was going to play that role backed out. And the movie was called Make Believe. And I, they're like, well, we'd like you to do it. And I was like, oh my God, you know, what the fuck? I'm so stoked. It's like, go. And I do my first day. And I was like, this is crazy. Julius Demenz, Jules, who's out in California, and back and forth. He does quite a bit of work. He's a super talented cinematographer. And I worked with him, and I worked with quite a few other people that I've seen continue, right? Mm-hmm. Continue. Some gone to California, some moved on. But that next day, my house burned down.
What?
Fuck, I'm not kidding you. I am not.
That is so crazy.
No, but the what the fuck crazy, right? Well, it's just so happened that I was wearing wardrobe because I fell asleep on the couch. And a Himalayan salt lamp known for arcing the cord, it was on recall. It burned the whole place down.
Oh,
completely to shit rubble.
That sucks.
And they called and they were like, you know, you're gonna, you know, you're good. Is everything fine? It's like, my house burned down. And they're like, oh my God, that's okay. And I'm like, yeah, but what are you gonna do? Like, I'm the character in the film and you have to start over and not be able to finish it. They're like, that's okay, Scott. And I'm like, fuck no, it's not. I'll be there. So the next day, after spending several hours in the hospital afterwards, because I think I blew like a 9. On CO2
blood. No.
I sucked in so much smoke that I was like blowing a 9.
Damn.
Which is really bad. I think 10 is where they're like, you're admitted. And then, slept, woke up, went to film, finished, had wardrobe. I was like, fuck, I got wardrobe, I'll go. So that was my first film.
Wow. Well, that's
a great story. I mean, sorry, dude, but
I mean, man, you were literally fire.
Exactly. Not actually, but it was, the whole fire was crazy too. Wait, I woke up. I think I inhaled too much smoke. I was just wacky.
I mean, is that how you woke up and the house was on fire?
I woke up smoking. Yeah,
man, you got lucky because that's usually when people get knocked out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And just don't wake up.
It doesn't take long. I mean, smoke just takes oxygen out of your blood, out of your, like, it takes away your oxygen so quickly. That's when you lose consciousness and you're just done. You're toast. Yeah. So we were lucky to get out. We were lucky to be alive. Wife at the time. Three kids there.
Damn.
And we lost a dog, unfortunately.
Yeah, man, so that sucks about your house. But we're all glad you got out.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
That's like...
Because then we had...
I was missing like absolute every like iota of sincerity, but I am grateful you said that.
That was his pickup. That was his pickup. Get right in.
Here we are.
Welcome back.
Yeah. Welcome back.
Where did we leave off, Scott? Your house was burning down.
See, when he said my house burned down, it's like he said it in a jokingly way. House. Like
it is funny. The funny part of it is just how fuckety everything was, and then you go, you went to the film. Are you shitting me? Like, that's, hey, like, stupid, silly.
With that level of dedication, you'll always have a part in whatever movie that we're making.
Well, structures, hopefully I don't have to fight house
just,
fires
just
to get
sleep
there,
in your wardrobe, all right?
I know, sure, fair enough.
Right. Yeah, why is Dante taking his wardrobe home? We know.
But I did, you know, for you know, just beginning and then starting with Make Believe. So as that, you know, tuning up what happens next, well, oh, my gosh. I was in so many capstones. And then Lindenwood, so full of projects, one after another, after another, after another. I met so many kids that were uber talented. And then I stretched out, went to Webster. And then I was filling, which would probably be in my second or third year, probably did over 20 plus short films in a single year. It was every other weekend, if not every weekend. Then the word starts to travel if you're decent, you know, if people enjoy watching you and maybe they talk about you, if that's all it takes, I don't know. And then here comes more projects, more projects, more projects.
Yeah, I've said that lots of times on the show that I've gotten a lot of work just from being on a set, you know, the week
exactly.
before, you know.
You do one set, you got you got 10 filmmakers right there.
Yeah.
Right. One's running sound, he's a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then it's because it's your students, for the most part, right? And they're doing everything. They're trying to figure out what's next, right? So they're figuring it all out, all at once. Then they can pick the one, and then go forward with it.
Yeah, but you proved your dedication, too, because you can be as talented as you can be if you don't show up, or you're an asshole, or you're something else, right?
I mean, yeah, I mean, stay an asshole, and if you sell seats, it doesn't matter.
Well...
True.
At this level, though?
Yeah, I mean, not at this level. That's where are you selling seats? Sell some seats, and yeah, it won't matter.
No. I'm just saying at this level.
At this level, it's different.
Yeah. Greed. I think it has something to do with talent plus dedication. Plus
greed.
Showing up plus
yes.
putting up. showing up and putting up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if this applies everywhere, but I know St. Louis is a pretty small town, and your reputation really matters.
It matters.
So if you have a reputation as someone who's difficult to work with, that gets around really fast.
It does.
And you're going to find people don't want to work with you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a reputation of someone who is easy to work with and who will show up after, say, their house burned down, people are going to work with you.
So you've been doing this for a little while now, pretty much nonstop, it sounds like. Have you noticed much of a change in how... I guess all independent film industry is gone.
I mean, at this level, not a whole lot, really. I mean, it's the same grind. It's the same people trying to do the same things. And what I have noticed over that time is that being sort of engrossed in the level that we're in, often people are repeating the same thing over and over again. And then the predecessors are repeating the same thing over and over again, and the result doesn't change. Yeah, that's kind of what we're talking about. Here we are.
You said that very well.
Why the fuck are we here?
No, you said that very well.
So are you talking about in general production? People are doing the same thing over and over again, ending up with the same results? Is that what you mean?
Production, I mean results. What are you getting? You got some festivals, it's awesome, but what I think a missing link in this whole process is distribution, the levels of and how to and how to get money. And I don't think they teach that at Lindenwood or Webster. Well, there's a formula. I mean, there's a formula for fucking everything. There's a formula for that. We don't know it, right? It's a fucking algorithm. We don't know.
Right. No, but nobody knows it because it's changing so fast.
Well, I don't think so.
I do.
I think the people that know it climb so quickly that you lose sight of them and you don't even know how it happened.
Or they happened upon it, and then
suddenly they're...
Yeah, but most businesses have a professional, midterm, low level, and it all kind of pays exactly at that level. I don't see that. Okay, go back to... Okay, so Jason Horton, I was watching something on him, right? And he says he makes 12 movies a year on something else to pay his bills. And then he goes out the rest of the year and does what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
So that's his formula because he found something somebody wants to do, and then he works within the system of how to sell those things, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So he figured out the business side of it. He's just playing within the rules that were presented to him.
Sure.
So when you said...
Aren't we all?
Of course. But what resonated with me with what you said was we keep making films thinking something's just going to click by throwing it out there with the other million films that are just going to these sites and everything's getting lost, right? There's no bottom tier. Hey, if you get in here, you're going to make $30,000 a year doing this, right? And if you're this level, you're going to make $200,000. If you hit it big time, you're going to be in
there.
Just because talent is also so up and all, because there's no...
It's subjective, right?
It's subjective.
Oh, it's so subjective.
There's no bar to entry. There's zero bar to entry.
No. No, nor a bar when you enter. to slow or stop you.
No, you can enter on your phone. I mean, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Even with the technology and stuff, anybody mm-hmm. can do it at any given time.
Absolutely.
That's why I say it's changing so fast, and there's more entry. It's easier to enter. It's cheaper, right?
Yeah.
So if you look at it from a business sense, but I wanted to bring up what Mr. Horton's doing just because from a business side, he figured out how to pay his bills doing something.
That he loves. Yeah.
Right, and people watch it.
Yeah.
So he's got all that stuff awesome. Down, and then he goes out and does something else. I think
that's a great formula.
Some of us are like, well, we have to make films all the time, and we're only going to do it if it's this, right?
Mm.
Right, and I think that's where we're limited as filmmakers, not necessarily actors or other things, but
kind of lost in the process.
Of course, or you're only doing something every 3 years, or you're only doing something every whatever.
Which is great. Then it's a hobby. Then it's fun, and you love it, and it's not about making money. Which is fantastic.
If you accept that, that's
your world.
Figure out what it's for you. That's your world.
But if you want to learn how to land investors and get distribution and actually, you know, make an impression that leaves somewhat of a historical mark in the industry, then you have to figure it out. And there's no training for that.
Okay, so here's something I want to throw out there. What's a full NFL roster? 40-something people.
Sure.
40-something players, and there's 30-something teams. Mm-hmm. So that's, I don't know, 1,200-some-odd players.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are the best of the best. Even the worst player on the worst team Excuse in the me. NFL
mm-hmm.
is better off than the people below them, right? Sure. How many people want to be on a professional football team? A lot. How many are really good but just don't make it?
More. 98%. About 1% of college athletes.
I said 98, yeah. I said 98, 99% of all college athletes don't make it.
And that's how that's how film is.
Mm.
People see that top tier percent and think, oh, I've got a reasonable shot of making it there. But the reality is, you're in the 98% that's not.
Yeah.
It's there, and there are so many people making movies, and there are so many movies, and there are just more and more and more. So I don't even know if the question is make a better movie. The question is, how do you separate yourself from everybody else?
That's a great question. Have to
drink on that one real quick.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, honestly, but I'm
because quality is only part of it.
Right, but I'm an experienced kind of viewer. So, like, I want to see, it could be a studio film, but if I turn it on and in the first 10 minutes it's trash, I'm done with it. I'm not into it. I won't watch it. Then I'll walk away from it. I never watch it because of that. But, like, an indie film, regardless of its studio or indie, if it's got me, it's got me. But then, like, do I hunt indie too curiously? Like, I'm going to find that? That's a lot to sift through. Studio, a lot less to sift through.
It is.
You know what I'm saying? So if I were to sift through indie and go, which one is going to capture my attention and keep it, I don't even know what the percentage is. It would be like, I'm going to watch a whole fucking ton of 10 minutes before I'm going to be able to stay on board with this film.
But the benefit in today's world is it's at your fingertips and you're allowed, you can do that.
Yeah, is it a benefit or detriment? I mean, that's the question. Is it a benefit or detriment,
right? Well, benefits to the viewers because they can go out and find something, but they're only looking at 10 minutes, so it's a detriment because it's like, nope,
there's
swipe
so
right,
much.
Swipe right, swipe right.
Right, but then like, so go empty out all the trash and then drop something of this extraordinary value in there somewhere.
Right. And how do you get that? How do you
get
that notice that it's good?
How long are you going to sift through the trash?
Well, the only way you get that notice that it's good is if somebody's promoting it and it's in your face. Right. That doesn't make it good. That just makes it noticeable.
Mm.
It goes back to marketing.
Right, exactly. And then the question is, like, if you do dump out all that trash and then you say, there might be something in there. There might be. And you're like, oh, really? Well, that trash looks gross.
But first, I got
to get. So, am I going to go through that and then maybe there's something? I don't know.
Yeah, but first, I got to find out what genre you're interested in. Sure, then I got to find, right? And I got to get down about to the
principles of marketing. Yeah, of course. You figure out your audience, figure out your product.
Find out where you're at. Match
your product with your audience and then, you know, tweak it. And at that again, 5 to 10%.
Probably not taught.
Not in film.
Right.
That's marketing. But how many filmmakers, indie filmmakers, are reaching out to marketing people to help them with their managing post and distribution of their film? No, it's the lighting guy that said, yeah, I know how to post on Facebook.
I wish we had that lighting guy.
You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. Just, if you're lucky.
I'm exaggerating, but are we as indie filmmakers finding people that are actually proven talents at marketing to market the films?
No. Generally, no.
No.
No. Or to learn from.
Or to write.
Right.
Or to soak up how to do this shit from.
The people in this market who are the most successful are the ones who are finding a way to market their films, market their persona, market their media.
Well, they're also utilizing some festival works as, you know, they'll get into some festivals, but, you know, there's also loopholes in the festival circuit too. Like, it's who you know, like you're talking about networking. Sure. You know, so it, I think a lot of it has to do with networking with people and obviously marketing, but I mean that is networking.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's a great example. So we have just gotten into a number of local festivals or festivals that we know people. Right, we've also just gotten our first handful of rejections from festivals where we don't know anybody.
Yeah.
And I would expect we're going to get more unless we had a relationship there. Now, granted, I have gotten into festivals where I didn't know anybody just based on the movie. Not so far with Red Knight, 'cause it's such a new product. But and that's the sad and funny thing is I've gotten the rejection emails and they're almost word for word exactly the same. Yeah. They really are.
Templates.
They're templates. And all I do is I scan for the word unfortunately. As soon as I see that, I know we did not get in. Delete. Then I go to Film Freeway. Delete.
You wrote unfortunately, but it sounds to me like suck a dick.
Yeah.
How about that?
You know, one thing we actually forgot, this is a different subject, but we forgot to mention that. Scott, you were actually in our movie.
Yeah, I was.
Oh, yeah.
Red I was.
We were going to get to that eventually.
I had the greatest moment of the shot scene, the scene that I got shot. I remember that. That was fucking awesome.
Oh, you got shot? Don't tell the people.
What are you doing?
Oh, for fuck's sake.
No, I'm fucking with you, man.
No, what a great scene. That sucks. What a good scene. That sucks. Yeah, that was a good scene.
Well, if you haven't seen it, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So let's go back a little bit and talk about Red Knight at Skies. What was your experience like on that film?
I loved it. You know, I mentioned to you that I was impressed with the production, impressed with the scheduling, the time management, the talent, which I think you guys were not short on what talent was available in St. Louis. So, yeah, among Brock, among Wolf, among, you know, Minnie, Kelly, you know, so many great and very talented actors. And to have Stanzi behind the camera, he's just mesmerizing. He's so talented to capture the kind of imagery that was just perfectly fit, you know, perfectly fit the movie. And so many interesting characters in the writing.
Probably a little different than the Lindenwood or Webster Productions.
Oh, of course. Well, for one, it was a feature. I've done those too. It was a feature, you know, which I've done several. But then, you know, for two, it was, you know, there was difference. And this is not to blow smoke. It's to say that, yeah, there was a difference. There's a difference in production as a value of how things are run. It just is hard to do, you know.
Right.
You've got a lot on your plate. Trying to manage scheduling and all that comes with making sure everybody's got what they need.
Right.
Which is, it's just relentless, right? It's an infinite list of shit to do and then having to have time left over for all the shit that you couldn't do, you know? And then, you know, to have the talent direction, of course, and the quality of the creativity. And it was, I mean, I've played it for a few people, and most responses I get is that it's, yeah, you know what I mean?
It's not a real like, movie.
Oh my God, it's the best thing ever. No, of course not. But what you want is, yeah, you know what? That worked. And I'm like, that's like the best compliment ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good honest comment though, because that puts it into, would somebody else click on it and go, that was worth my time.
That right. Worth my fucking time.
You right. Know, you know, it was my time invested in that for yeah. What I paid to get in this, knowing that it was an indie, you know, go, all right. I felt I got the return on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, of everybody that's seen it, it's good. It's worth it. It was worked and it was fun to watch. And the story was interesting and compelling. Like, he drags you through what the hell is happening kind of feeling for an hour and change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you did a great job playing your
part. Oh, thank you.
It's fun being on set with you.
Oh, it's fun to work with you too as well. You know, it's Kelly too. Like, we're all.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Fun group of actors.
Great work.
And,
great people.
You know, as an actor, you try to just focus on the other actors and not really focus on anything else but the moments you're having on camera.
Absolutely.
And, I wore a lot of hats on that film, but I felt it was really easy with the cast we had
mm-hmm.
where I could just put those other assignments I had on my shoulders away and just and get with you guys because we had a real professional cast.
Yeah.
And
we just could get it done. It just makes life easier when the talent across from you inspires you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah. It's fun when you can trust your other actors.
Yeah. I mean, it's
and
hard.
Director too.
It's know, so hard to emote like in an experience, to create an experience in a scene when you're across from death. You're like, okay, I'm
can't give you any more.
I got nothing else, man. You gotta just come alive or fuck it. It's gonna be what it is. So it is, life is so much easier when you can, you feel like you're not trying to drag out something to inspire you in a scene. So yeah, our work in the project and the scenes that we did together, which is quite a few.
Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah,
yeah, quite a few scenes. A lot. And then we did that. I think there was a lot of good, you know, a good connection, good charisma, good character, good stuff.
Yeah, that was the first film that we told Greg. And unfortunately, Brock had to play producer and
lead actor.
No, but you know,
do what you got to do.
But we tried to take everything off of Greg because we wanted Greg to shoot the film without having that wearing all the hats, and that's where I got brought in to the team, and that was my first producer role from that standpoint. But wish we would have given you a little bit more, Brock.
Not just producer. You were also talent.
Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you.
In the
so
film.
You were talent.
It was,
thank
it,
you.
It,
so
it was
I.
A memorable role. And your scene as well is a memorable
thank
scene.
You. Yes, I forgot about that. Uh-huh. So go see it because it changes the course of the movie, actually, it, that one scene.
It does.
Without
it, really does.
I wouldn't even go see it. If it weren't in there, I would tell everyone
not,
to not.
I may have not gone to Skies.
I know.
That's what I'm saying. It's
if you would have given him a decent price on that welder, then.
I think it's the way I played the line. I mean, I changed it several times because I had that ability being on the back end of this
You're
thing.
You're a catalyst to the shitstorm.
It was. You know, I wrote it. I so worked good. It. You know, hours
so
outside. Yeah.
I can't imagine.
In between buying pizzas, it was.
That's true. Chris Mackey worked.
And writing checks. I mean, that's what.
Chris Mackey worked for 3 months as a pawn shop employee.
I did.
Just to get down
just
those nuances.
I did. Well,
that's dedication.
It was tough.
And you can tell it paid off.
It was a great film. It was a great experience. I really enjoyed it, and you know how it came together on set, and as well as how it came together on the screen.
Yeah. So how many features do you normally do? Are you do a lot? Are you shorts or what do you?
I started a landscaping company and was inundated, so I didn't do a lot for. A couple of years. I still worked because I get a phone call and I'm right. like, you know, like, all right, cool. I'll do that. I'm like, who called? Mm, all right.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I'm in. I'm in. Who's the cinematographer? Oh, okay. I'm in. I'm in. All right. Fair enough. Cause that sounds great. But, features wise, like 10-ish. Well, I'd love it. Yeah. It'd be fun. I don't know.
You know, if we can make find a way to make money off of Red Knight, you know, that's.
You don't want to make money. You want to make enough back that your investors are happy to give it to you again. And then, you know, what they do is they give you more.
Right.
Because you brought their money back to them. And then you get enough more that you can raise the bar on the next one.
That's our plan, I think.
What?
Oh,
whoopsie daisy. I stopped taking notes earlier.
No, I mean, that's kind of the idea.
Make money back.
You're right. And we built that in. We built that into the thought process. Mm-hmm. But the reality of it is exactly what we started this whole conversation out about is what's it all about? How do you do it? Lessons are learned. Right. You're still making mistakes. You learned 1,000 lessons, but you're still out there in the rat race. Mm-hmm. And filming's all about timing of when you start things. If you don't get shots behind the scenes, you're never getting them, right? Because the film's done.
No, right.
If
exactly.
you don't do this prior right. to,
if you don't get pickups, you don't get all your sound.
I'm talking about for the marketing side of things. You know, you need so much of that stuff, and it's got to start before.
And
the production starts.
Yes, and are you're battling with. You're like you're racing a Volkswagen against a fucking Lamborghini. Mm-hmm. It's almost silly. Like, what are you trying to create distribution for an indie film made in St. Louis to hit on a national scale? Are you getting like full theatrical? Are you going wide release? You think you're gonna get that? You're not.
Right.
You're not. And stop. Like stop. Right. Thinking that's
so you
fucking,
can talk to the filmmaker.
Like
right
I'm telling
the
you, don't yes. think that's possible. That right. is not possible. What is possible is that you're gonna get noticed. So how do you get noticed? Well, you gotta be in places that people notice you, and a lot of those are festivals. And there's a four the top four right with the Vancouver, the Cannes, the.
Toronto, Cannes, Sundance.
Sundance, Cannes, Toronto, Vancouver.
You're never getting in those either.
Those are the biggies, right? So you get in something like that, then you're doing something.
There's a whole laundry list of reasons why you're not going to get in those.
Right. And we can get into the nepotism and all the bullshit and that you were talking about knowing people and all that stuff. And getting into a position where you're seen and people recognize that there's talent is like the gamble. I think, you know, in this industry, you're rolling the dice. It's what you do if you think you can make a living on it.
Oh, yeah.
You roll the dice. So the only way to never make it is stop rolling the dice. That's it.
That's why we say it sucks, because it sucks doing it. But you don't want to stop. But right? It's a drug.
Right.
It is. It's you just.
Oh, exactly. Because all of the struggles we're going through right. with Red Knight and every shitty thing we're dealing with, you know, distributors,
lawyers,
yeah, festival yeah. rejections, right. and other films getting screwed over, and all this shit. It all is terrible. But at the same time, I'm thinking, man, I want
to
make another movie.
I can't wait to get the needle in my arm and shoot the next one.
Oh my god! Yeah,
I know.
Well, the dopamine, dude. That's the dose of dopamine rush. That's what I'm saying.
It is that, but I tell you what. To be honest, it's also ego.
Mm.
It is.
I want to show these fuckers we can do it. You know, and if we can do it, so can you. You know, somebody's got to fucking take the football and run with it, and I'm hoping we can do that.
Yeah, I mean, if you can, then fantastic. But stick with ego, because if you can do it, it doesn't matter if they can.
Well, I'd still like to bring other people up that actually can do
and,
it.
And you, I think in like Adam Sandler, for example, which is a phenomenal story of a you know claim to fame Saturday Night Live jokester that starts making movies and makes a family of people and makes every single movie with his family.
I'd love that.
Which is incredible. And I think that's what you're talking about, which is phenomenal if it's feasible and if you can accomplish that and then like find your way up the ladder and somebody hits it and then bam, the family comes.
I'm looking for the fucking escalator, man. I'm tired of climbing the ladder, for real.
The escalator.
I'm ready to go.
It's great.
You're like in Macy's, New York, where there's like eight floors, and you're like on floor two. Yeah, like, man, there's another escalator. Son of a bitch.
I'm going to use somebody else's power to go
up
this
fucking elevator?
I would just like some rungs on the ladder I'm trying to climb.
Then I'd be messy enough. And muddy, and you're fair slipping.
No, like something to put my foot on.
He's stepping on a rope.
Oh, yeah. Man. So anything you want to promote? Are you working on anything now? Anything you want to promote?
Well,
it was
good. That's some projects in Franklin County, which is where we're out there, where the film festival was that Red Knight played. But you guys have an interesting...
We talked about that.
You had an interesting conversation about that, right? Yeah. Right. So yeah, I'm involved with a filmmaker out there. We're finishing a feature.
Nice.
And I think we ended up starting off with a little different of a role, and now it's more of a lead role, which that turns out to be kind of cool. I finished a few shorts recently. One got some attention from HBO, so there's some possibility that some traction on a project like that.
Nice.
There's a couple of things coming up. Oh, I have a short. Was so well written too. It's beautifully written. Flirtologist is the name of it. Beautifully written. Auditioned, and we're gonna film that in a month or so. So yeah, stay busy.
How
just
far's the feature
being
along?
Fun. We've filmed for a year now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So nothing.
So off and on.
It's not wrapped.
No. Oh. Far from wrapped.
Gotcha.
We need to, he's probably got good portion of this year to wrap.
Okay.
And then go into post.
Okay, cool.
So probably another year.
Yeah, exactly.
Year change.
then add a year. Right?
Oh, yeah. You always think if you go to the movies and you're like, say you watch this podcast, right? You don't know anything about film.
Exactly.
If you go to the movies and watch a film, it was probably made about 2 years and change ago.
Yes.
At least.
Yeah. At least.
The actors wrapped around 2+ years.
I've heard some of them made several movies since that movie hasn't even come out. Yes.
And that's what happens. And you think like, wow, it's like Timothy Chalamet for example. You're like, he's very talented, and then suddenly he's in another one, and another one,
right?
And it's like, how did
and
he
one
do
comes
so?
Out every 6 months, right?
Yeah. How did he do so many movies in such a short period of time? It's like, no, he was on set, super talented. One of the producers, the casting directors, they saw the work, and then suddenly they're like, this is your dude. And that dude gets picked up on this project and on this project, and suddenly it's like snowball project after project after project. Typically, I think like in this world, that's what happens. Mm-hmm. You do or you don't. Mm-hmm. Like you catch fire, and you roll, and suddenly it amounts to exactly what you dreamed it would be, or you don't.
But some people catch fire, then immediately go out.
Oh, well, yeah, the flash in the pan, of course.
And then some people catch fire, and they go really cold, and then Tarantino puts them in Pulp Fiction, and then they come back.
How about that,
man,
right?
Man.
Pam? Are we talking about Pam?
No.
Are we talking about...
Talking about Travolta.
Travolta, yeah.
He already had some things going on.
No, his career was dead as dead could be.
I would still say Travolta's dead career.
The female, the flight attendant.
Oh, Pam Grier, yeah.
Pam Grier had basically sunk and then not done anything, and she goes into
That is my favorite Tarantino movie. Yeah,
but anything
Hands
Tarantino
down.
Touched.
Hands down.
That's the thing is you had the Midas
so
golden touch
good.
Guy, so you just had to get in it. Right?
And I mean,
guys
you get invited
done,
into
guys
that shit.
Guys would have done that for half price. You know, guys would just want it to be in the movies.
But it's often that happens a lot.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you're doing projects. And that happens, you know, even just far down as indie. So, like, when I get a phone call and they're like, hey, you want to do a project? And like, I'm like, well, where are we at? And they're like, well, I don't have much to do. And I'm like, okay, well, who's in it? And they're like, so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so. And I'm like, okay, you got my attention.
Right.
And then I'm like, oh, so who's behind camera? And they're like, well, so-and-so's behind camera. I'm like, well, now you have more of my attention.
Right. I'm you're willing to come in for less.
And I go, send me the script.
Yeah.
But I'm like, in that case, it's like, there's no money. Well, then I would love to be doing this nonstop regardless and never have to worry about money. That'd be phenomenal. But still, even if I wouldn't, if I thought it would be crap.
Sure. Yeah. No, that's the thing, man. And a lot of younger filmmakers and people just don't get it. Money should not be your primary motivator.
No.
And I see so many people posting, unless you're getting paid this rate and you're getting ripped off, like, man, do something else for a job. Because this is not just about the job.
No, it's not. Oh, we do have, I got a call from Nathan Storm and Dangerous Isolation we did quite some time ago, not terribly long ago, but that was a crazy cool project to do. So we've got a written prequel.
Oh, cool.
To Dangerous Isolation. So that likely will turn into in production. Well, 5-6 months, I guess.
Cool. Nathan Storm is a good dude.
Yeah. He is a good dude. He's a good dude, and we got a cool script to work through, and then start working on production, start thinking about it. You know, so one of the issues with Dangerous, the project that we did, was just like, you didn't fill in the holes. I'm like, all right, so we need a prequel.
Oh man, that's what you do.
Fill in the holes. So then now that one makes sense.
Yeah.
And then and you can go out and buy the first one
fun
again.
Fun character.
See, but that's too. What you do. Mm-hmm.
Super fun character. Super fun. Maniacal, just whacked out, fun. I like that.
All right, well, you know what else is fun?
What else do you like, Chris?
I like, you know what I like, Brock?
No, whatever could it be?
I like it when we talk about the highs, the lows, and the in-betweens. Of true independent filmmaking.
We did that today.
We did that.
Film Sucks Podcast.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you so much,
man,
for coming out.
We appreciate it. Thanks for just being
I love being here. I love you guys, man. Yeah. You guys are a talented actor.
So sweet.
Talented director.
Appreciate
talented
it.
Writer.
Yeah, don't and, think about and, my and, acting. Like,
producer just and, thrown and again, into it, producer, and yes. Killed it. So,
again, Scott, I'm phenomenal. Happy you didn't die in your fire.
That's kind of you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
All right,
guys.
Well, good night.
All right, peace out.
Indie film sucks. Indie film sucks. It's the Indie Film Sucks podcast. Yeah.